you are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang, Dwayne.
Hey.
And me, Brian, because Niall's at work this week. But we shall persevere. I'm losing my voice. It's a bad sign for a start of a podcast. We are covering anime which aired between November the 20th and November the 26th, with the solitary exception of Bono Bono, of which we are still about 7 weeks behind. Talking of Bono Bono, this week's episode was Let's Make Friends with the Wind.
Again, right, I think we're going to catch up eventually and they're going to be making explicit references to the podcast because that's the title, right?
It is, yes, and that will be the title of this week's episode. And the screenshot will be a picture of Raccoon's face as he's standing on the edge of the cliff.
Windswept and interesting, yes. Yeah.
Bloodshot, screaming at the wind.
That's interesting.
Bono watches grass sway in the wind and he thinks, is the grass a friends with the wind? Shall I become a friends with the wind?
His logic later to Chipmunks is the grass moves when the wind goes by, so the grass must be friends with the wind and be playing with the wind.
Yes.
And Chipmunks is like, what if it doesn't move in the wind? It's like, well, then they're probably having a fight.
Chipmunk has a go, and he finds it fun, but he doesn't think this is being friends with the wind, because to be friends with the wind, you have to be its equal.
And so he be friends with someone who's better than you.
He builds... This is after they've looked at what other people are doing in the wind. So I think Prairie Dog is chasing his futon, which is just a big leaf.
And they're like, okay, what about what the trees blowing in the wind? It's like, they're probably having a conversation. What about this situation? What about Wolverine's dad?
They just don't know what to make of that. They're just like stunned.
Shocked silence.
Chipmunk builds these butterfly wings that he actually does soar and sail in the wind. They're very well constructed.
Yeah, like a flying squirrel. It's perfect.
Until he hits Raccoon's face.
Yeah.
And then the Raccoon's what are you guys doing? We're trying to be friends with the wind. You can't be friends with the wind.
I did like his the kind of reversal of him kicking Chipmunk into the sky and the he's bullying me and Chipmunk just flies away and everyone's like, what the fuck? That's never happened before. Good stuff.
How do they convince him to go to the cliff's edge?
They say, like, a Chipmunk says, oh, you obviously can't be friends with the wind because the wind is better than you.
Oh, that's it, yes.
Yeah, he turns his thing of needing to be equal to the wind to be friends to really piss off Raccoon because the wind is better than him because it was pushing him back because it was blowing really strong. Yeah. Where's the strongest place the wind blows?
So they go there. He gets hit in the face with lots of things.
Yep.
But he does not falter, and so he declares that he has beat the wind, and so he throws rocks at the wind, which are then picked up by the wind and hit his dad in the head.
Yeah.
And so his dad comes along and says, what did I tell you? When you fight people, use your fists.
Kicks him off a cliff.
But then he's crying on the cliff, and they say, oh, the wind must be friends with you because it's wiping away your tears.
It's like, I don't want to win sympathy kind of thing, yeah. And then Bono's at the end trying to determine if he is actually friends with the wind. But then it kind of starts blowing. It blows a leaf out of his hand and starts swirling it around. I think that's a reasonably solid indicator, I guess. In as much as this show gives that, yeah.
Yeah, end of episode, yes. You decide.
I like that about this show, though. It's kind of like, the wind is your friend, Bono.
It was a good episode, and the next episode, Gobba-chan was a good episode, but it was another rare, scrappy-looking episode. Though it kind of played to its advantage, even though it did look a bit rushed. So this is episode 55, Pepe-san's Secret, one for the dads. As she dresses up like a Cat's Eye character for most of the episode.
Well, I was thinking more like Blood Blockade Battlefront, because she did that teleportation thing that your one does, or the thing where she disappears and vanishes.
Yeah. But she's in the Cat's Eye leotard and and
a sash
around the waist.
And doing all the spy stuff.
Yeah, so the key to this is she's trying to stop the president, Ashibe's granddad, from seeing this contract.
Yeah, this vital contract that he's, like, really insistent on getting. This is all the business he has to do today, apparently, or something.
Yeah, so she's locked it in the safe and taken away the key, but then she accidentally throws the key away, as we see.
Mm. In her panic at Ashibe overhearing her evil plan but not understanding what a contract is.
The president can't get the safe open, so he offers to make whoever can get the safe open vice president. And so she does all these other tactics to try and delay people from getting there.
Yeah, because she's like, the president knows how to motivate his guys, but I know how each of their weaknesses.
Yes, the return of the room full of lizards.
Hey, you got to have an iguana farm, man.
But it turns out at the end, Ashibe got the key because he picked it up, which I think this is a case where the audience, at least the adult audience watching, are one step ahead.
Yeah. You can see Ashibe is trying to resolve the issue by accident the entire time, but she's too busy fucking with everyone in the building to do anything about it. Mm.
And it turns out the reason she doesn't want to see him see the contract is because she doodled on the back of it this spy manga concept, all based around herself being a spy, and then various drawings of all the other people at the staff at the company.
In a kind of shoujo style. It was reminding me of Carrot's drawings of the crew in One Piece.
Yes.
That kind of thing where they're all very pretty.
Except for the one who she might actually have feelings for.
Yeah, he looks like a little turd man. Yeah.
It's the fact that he can recognize himself as well from that really simple drawing.
I mean, the head's basically spot on, yeah. Maybe he's drawn closest to life, that's why being drawn as a potato man, yeah.
But yeah, Granddad's like, oh, what are you ashamed of? This is great, I'll publish this for you.
And she's very embarrassed, of course.
But yeah, the art's a little scrappy, animation's a little scrappy, but the punchline and the jokes are good.
Mm. I think my favourite was her joke of like, the three-part joke, like, kind of thing of, like, plan, blah, 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 worked on this guy, plan, blah, 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 worked on this guy, and then on your man who fancies her. It's kind of like, plan, the president's in a cranky mood, totally worked. It's like, yeah, you thought he wasn't going to go for vice president, and then he wasn't going to anyway.
Yes.
Not really part of the plan, but all right.
Doesn't look like there's an episode next week, though.
Hmm.
Or this week as we're recording, because it's not there. So I'll have to check up when the next ones are coming, or whether it's going into repeats again for the rest of the year.
Mm.
Right, next up on the list, I've got, what shall we say? Let's clear up Inuyashiki first. Episode 7? Yeah, Shion Watanabe, in which Hiro confesses to Shion, and then tries to make amends for his horrible deeds, albeit in a horribly mechanical fashion.
Yeah, it feels like nearly going through the motions that your man was going through and trying to that Inuyashiki was trying to go through. And like the thing that he's doing genuinely to prove to himself that he's human, he's just going like, yes, I will prove I am human by saving as many people as I killed. And it's like, that doesn't stop all the people you killed, dude. That doesn't.
Yeah, it's like a terribly. But it feels like that would, from what we learned, because this is a pretty good episode in that
it's really like happy and positive, and it feels wrong. And it works well for that.
It has a go because we've never had him explain why he's doing these things.
Yeah.
To this point, and we get a reason. It's not a good reason.
No,
but it's. But based on how broken he was before he was turned into a robot.
Yeah.
And we learn the event, which he was clearly broken, as I think he would admit himself, his reaction to the guy committing suicide in front of him at the train station was odd.
I guess you could say like he was in shock from it, but obviously it's something he never truly recovered from.
Yes, yeah. And what he interpreted of that is like that was the only time he felt alive was seeing a guy commit suicide.
Or just seeing a life snuffed out in front of him.
Seeing a guy die in front of him.
Yeah.
And so he was trying to prove to himself, just like Inuyashiki was trying to prove himself that he was human by saving people and helping people.
Mm.
that's the only thing, that was the only time he felt human before being turned into a robot, so that was the only way he could feel human after being turned into a robot.
Yeah, yeah. Again, like, it's made clear from his friend in the prior episode that he doesn't give a fuck about anyone who he doesn't know.
Yes, and there's been stuff about him torturing animals as well when he was younger.
Yeah, I mean, like, I still don't know if that was just hearsay for the news media kind of shit, but
I thought that was...
I wouldn't put it past him as a character.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
It fit so far, like...
Yeah, it's... but yeah, I think it works... I think it's really well directed and laid out, that scene.
Yeah.
Because with the focus on her face and her reactions to him and his acting, I think it really works quite well.
I'm trying to figure out, like, is she in denial, or what's her deal? Does she think she can fix him, you know, that kind of...
Well, no, I think she says, the reason she says she's so sad is that she...
Not because he's going to murder her now and everyone in Japan, like,
yes.
He just says, it's like, I don't want you to leave me and Grandma.
Yeah, and also, but she's so sad is because she can't think, she says she can't think of a way to fix this.
Right, right. This is kind of her traumatic incident, I suppose. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so then they go around Japan helping people, curing them.
And yeah, he sets up like a Twitter feed. It's like, hey, meet me here if you want to get cured of cancer. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was a fucking horrible scene, actually, with that woman with the most awkward fucking horrible lunch I've ever seen. Fucking hell.
But yes, it feels awkward and mechanical, but it still feels like how he would do this, thinking this is a good thing.
He's nearly like... The fact that your one was even go, hey, check it out, we got 500 retweets and everything. It's all... And him seeing this as positive and everything, it's all like a raw fucking numbers. It's all a game. It's all still pretense and false. You know,
yeah.
Your man runs into hospital, cures a person of cancer. Is like, and someone goes like, "Hey, what are you doing?" He's like, "Ugh," and just legs it. You know, because he's kind of an idiot.
Yeah.
But Hero is a lot more robotic, I suppose, for lack of a better term. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And then right at the end, men with guns show up, and I can't imagine things going well for Shion or her grandmother in
nope.
the next week's episode.
No, not really. And it's again, I feel like they're trying to. Are they trying to give me sympathy for Hero kind of thing? Because it's like, no.
No, I don't think it is. I mean, there's other stuff about how horrible teenagers are in this as well. With the one
yeah.
saying, oh, I think I'm going to be a YouTuber when I leave school. Oh,
I fucking saw that bit.
I'm
going to
marry a celebrity.
I saw those fucking things and I was like, what? The entire show is so fucking cynical with how it treats certain people, like, and yeah, especially young people so far.
Yeah, but
it's like
also,
he's empty inside because
yeah.
he's really into One Piece. He should have read Gantz.
Yeah.
Then he'd be a decent citizen. Strange show.
But yeah, I mean, this was a well directed episode. The story is what the story is, and I think it does the weird thing it's trying to do quite well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the anime executes it superbly, though. Next on my list, I've got Classicaloid. To be Motz is to fib. this was okay animation. Nothing as bad
yeah.
as those two really bad-looking episodes, but not as good-looking as last week.
Yeah.
In which everyone, except for Schubert, because he can't be trusted to lie...
he's too honest.
Trick Mozart into not lying. They're sick of his lying, and so they come up with this plan.
Well, they're all sitting around the table giving out. I was thinking of the Superman Revenge Squad kind of
yes.
thing. It's like, we must stop this man. Except I was kind of like, yeah, fuck that guy. he's a real jerk.
Yes, because we get a nice as this is going around, we get this montage, and then we see him doing some more lies out of town to other people, including a 7-year-old girl who he says he will marry her when that she's old enough, because it
yeah.
turns out she reminds him of Marie Antoinette.
Of course.
So yes, their trick is they tell him that Dvorak used to be a human Classicaloid until he lied all the time, and then he turned into a hippo because that's what
it's
happens.
It's a failsafe built yes. into Classicaloids to prevent them from lying too much.
And then Beethoven gives him a really... Mozart thinks they're lying. He's like giving them a score on how much they're trying to trick him.
And how funny their lie is,
yes.
yeah, yeah.
But then Beethoven does a really big lie, and then the next morning...
It's such a fucking obvious thing. It was like, I promise I wouldn't, I won't grind my teeth tonight, yeah. And I am a man of my promises, but if I turn into a hippo, well, I suppose I deserve it. You know, the kind of thing is just like, he's doing it fairly straight, but it's such a fucking obvious lie, it's pretty great.
Yeah, and then when he wakes up, there's a hippo dressed as Beethoven.
Like, when we later see Beethoven, because obviously it's Dvorak in his clothes, when we later see Beethoven, he's wearing the hippo's clothes.
Yes.
So, like, how do they get Beethoven's clothes to fit the hippo and vice versa? It's amazing.
But then, because they didn't tell Schubert, he introduces this B-plot of Schubert trying to turn himself into a hippo.
Initially, he's trying to speak hippo so he can communicate with his senpai, and then it's like, I will become a hippo, but I must construct the greatest lie. And he's just like really trying too hard, like standard Schubert.
Yeah, it's the bit where he goes, well, I turned myself into a trout that one time. I should be able to turn myself into a hippo.
It does have plot relevance. If we refer back to season one, this could work.
And his lie is so terrible.
I was trying to, like, it was so quick and bad. I was like, wait, what was the, oh, okay. Yes. Yeah, he has to further explain it. He did such a bad job of it, yeah.
So this girl shows up at the house wanting to go ahead with the marriage to Mozart, and she's not going to leave the house and go back home, and they just go.
And she's back because Mozart is trying to make all his lies truth so he doesn't turn into a hippo.
And it turns out she's got problems at home because their family's always moving due to her dad's work. And it's not so much that, it's the fact that when she leaves these schools, people promise to her that they're going to write and keep in touch. And they don't.
Yeah.
And so Mozart is actually trying to be quite sweet here and go through with his promise to show that he really means what he's saying, even though all these other times he hasn't.
Yeah.
And then he finally remembers his encounter with Marie Antoinette as well.
Yeah, because the situation where he falls flat in his face was exactly the same, except he was way younger than her.
Yes.
Reverse the ages kind of thing.
Yeah, it seems like still Mozart and Beethoven are the ones who have got the least of their memories back.
Yeah.
Schubert seems to know a lot about his past with Beethoven.
I think that's why he likes Beethoven so much.
And we know that Dvorak apparently knows everything. He just can't communicate it because he's a hippo. And Liszt, like, oh yeah, I used to be a man, but now I'm a woman, but that's fine. I can live with this.
Yeah, I think Liszt knows a good bit, but just is cool with everything for some reason. Yeah.
Yes, it was a good episode. It was quite sweet. I liked how everyone was absolutely freaked out by this girl wanting to...
It's about time, anime. It's about fucking time. Because it's weird and creepy, and he's too fucking old, and that's odd. That's called grooming, and that's weird.
And then next week, Beethoven goes insane over circles. As far as that's all you can really glean from the preview. Was him being super enthusiastic over circles and being angry at squares.
Like, I don't know if that was just the bullshit they met up in the preview, or did they just happen to have because they happen to have prominent shots of circles in the episode, or is that actually the plot of the episode?
Or maybe there is a thing in history about, see, when I look at Beethoven and circles, though, all I get is the band Camper Van Beethoven and a track called Circles.
Right, okay.
I suspect it's not referencing that. Though who knows. Unless it's going to be something about, musical circles.
Okay.
We shall see.
I'm still not sure how Gyoza fucking ties into Beethoven's music. So, yeah.
That's true, but the coffee thing is literally out of Beethoven's.
Yeah. That's more true to history. It was a good episode. There was a lot of good, like, character interactions and stuff. I did like the stuff between Kanai and her mom, where her mom keeps forgetting that she's backhandedly insulting her daughter by mistake, obviously.
Yes, Kanai has to keep on reminding her that you abandoned me.
You abandoned me, and it's like, oh, you were so cute when you were young. But you're still cute now, all that kind of jazz. Good stuff.
Alrighty ho, on to the Crunchyroll stuff. Let's go in the order that I've got it, I guess. Magical Circle Guru Guru, episode 20, Escape Left Island. Which is another episode which does not bear much resemblance to the comic that bore it.
I would say it doesn't bear much resemblance to the show that it is.
Yeah.
It's playing it fairly straight, like.
This is the same screenwriter as episode 17, the last time we ran into this problem.
Yeah.
They also did episode 15, which didn't have that problem, so... I don't know. I get what they were going for, and I think what they're going for works quite well. It just doesn't feel like the same show we've been watching.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was necessarily a bad episode, but it's hard to call it a good episode of the fucking this show.
Yeah, so they're basically stuck on this island to the south of the... was it the Kapol continent they were on?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, they're trying to get to the next island, the next continent.
They're on the left-hand island, as you look at it. Yes.
But they're stuck in, like, a Groundhog Day scenario.
Yeah, but they're aware that every day seems the same.
Yes.
But Cookery is obviously fine with that, because every day is super fun. Which man's going to get, I'm pretty sure we had this for dinner yesterday. Yeah.
And then a demon butler pops in and gives them a hint that something's
wrong. He doesn't want to give them entirely a hint, because he is a bad guy.
Yes. that some who's watching you is basically what you're saying. And then there's two other characters of the encounter. There's this young girl about their age who wears glasses. And then
who looks a lot like Cookery, and therefore that's why they get along.
Yep. And then there's a woman in a library reading a book about twins. And so at first they think it's the young girl, because she starts projects and doesn't end them.
Yeah, and she's designed a dress, but she hasn't finished it because she doesn't have confidence in her skills. Yes. And that kind of thing.
The best bit, the best joke of the entire episode is how it goes on for about half an episode before and they suddenly move the camera slightly to the right and Adverg sitting there at their breakfast table in the morning.
Yeah, he was just cut out of the frame in the last thing. I kind of thought of it was that kind of like the character's point of view, that they're just fucking ignoring him?
Yeah, I think so, yes. Because he's also okay with staying there, because he gets to tell everybody about his North-North dance.
dear.
Yeah, so they convince her to go through with her seamstress ambitions.
Yeah, she wants to open a dress shop and everything. Yeah,
she's got this dress which is almost made, but she's too frightened to take the pins out of.
Mm.
She eventually plucks up courage, takes the pins out, and then that seems to stop the same demon who shows up every morning to fight them.
Yeah, it causes the weather to change and that kind of thing.
So they think they can go leave now, but then they hit like a glass wall.
Yeah.
And they're like,
very much a Truman Show kind of thing. Yes. Yeah.
Something else is happening here. And then they revisit they trick the woman in the library by sending the girl in glasses dressed as Cookery.
Yeah, in Cookery's dress or cloak or whatever you call it. And a wig, obviously.
Yeah, so while she's focused on her, they're able to get through the glass wall. But then it turns out, while Cookery thought it was the woman from the sealing, the previous Migu Migu woman who did the seal sealing her boyfriend.
Yeah, because they mentioned so I guess sometimes, I forgot the kind of tuna, doesn't need teriyaki.
Yes.
On it, or something like that. But yeah, it's not that. It's more complicated.
Yes, it's actually Cookery herself who was doing it. And then they get stopped by the time goddesses for messing with time.
They try to run away, but they just rewind the video, and it's like, dude, we're time goddesses. Well, we can just
luckily,
do that.
That girl's dad had given Nikkei a headband earlier in the episode, which allows you to erase one error.
And they're like, is that okay? It's like, well, if they erase the error, I don't see why. Yeah. they get off one scot-free.
Yes.
One thing.
And then Gipple shows up and goes, where have you guys been? Something terrible has happened.
If he was in here this episode, he would have been in so much pain.
He would have been, yes. And I think he is in the comic.
Right,
I believe it's a different character who tells them that something terrible's gone wrong during the... And also in the comic, I mean, the same basic thing happens with the headband, the time goddesses, the library, the girl, the seamstress, the dresses. There's another dress involved.
Okay.
There's more characters involved, like the big stone tablet shows with the prophecy tablet that the guy shows up.
Oh, okay.
And presumably there's a lot more gags because it all runs at a lot faster. There's a lot more beats to it because of all these extra characters.
I mean, like, most of the jokes are this is the one with Nike's increasingly different ways of cheating at their morning match with the demon guy.
I think those are added. I don't think those are in the comic.
Those are added to this to actually have some jokes in there.
I think so, yes. And also, it looks like the girl and her family show up later after they've escaped or after they've broken that glass. Maybe they can go back now. But I don't know what happens next. I don't know what happens next in the anime. I do know what happens next in the comic. And I do hope
But since it's diverging, it's hard to figure it out. Yes.
I hadn't properly looked at the end credits until this week, and there's some good jokes in there. Particularly the cascade of posing old men.
Dude, I love that one. My favorite is the one, because obviously I didn't know who the character was initially, the princess of plants or whatever. The plant queen?
Yeah.
I can't think of her name. Where she's reacting to like all the old men, and then she sees fucking Nike with the mustache, and she's kind of like, "Ah, son of a bitch." there's some good gags there.
The thing I liked about this episode in what it was doing is that it suddenly made all the backgrounds really photorealistic.
Yeah, and it feels really different for it. I think the characters are slightly different proportioned in relation to it. It feels like a different show.
Yeah, but I think it added to the sense of unease that the backgrounds had changed.
Yeah.
I think these proportions, I have to check the last couple of episodes, but I think these definitely feel like the last time they changed things around a bit in episode 17, where they look a little bit older.
Yeah, their arms and legs are longer.
Yeah.
They're less kind of chibi-esque, I guess. Yeah.
Which would be fine if they did that slowly through the rest of the series, as obviously they are getting older.
Yeah, that's a kind of background to the plot of the magic and everything, yeah.
Yeah. The time limit of her being able to use Guru Guru.
Hmm.
I think we're heading into the finale.
Well, yeah, the next episode is revived Demon King Giri, and he's doing a JoJo's pose on the preview, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. I'm hoping it's pretty close to the comic in the next one, because I looked ahead and there's some pretty wacky looking characters and wacky looking things coming up.
Yes.
Okay, next on my list I've got Ancient Magus's Bride, episode 8, Let Sleeping Dogs Lie. In which we have to the unfortunate case of who that little guy is.
Okay, so he calls himself one thing and everyone calls him another thing, but he really doesn't want to be called that. And he's possibly two guys.
They're calling him the name of the Wandering Jew.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's calling himself Joseph.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
And they specifically say he was cursed by God's son to never die.
It's like, just in case you didn't get this anti-Semitic myth fully down, we'll explain exactly how anti-Semitic it is.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, Chisei gives the dog a Jewish name. For companion.
Oh, that had the fucking... Yeah.
So I don't know... I don't know if this is just ignorance or the series is loading itself up with a weight that it's not going to carry.
I think it's probably just like, that's a cool legend, I'm going to stick that in there. It's probably just
Cribbin
notes that it thinks sound like, ooh, a freaking immortal guy, and maybe he went crazy and does experiments to try and figure out what he is and that kind of shit. And it's just like, if you're talking about what's behind it, that's,
and they won't be the first people to do that.
Sure.
Obviously, because of the... DC Secret Origins in the 80s, where they gave the Phantom Stranger 4 separate origins, one of which was that he was the Wandering Jew.
But
it was like, I mean, I can understand people not wanting to carry on watching it after that. And
did that upset a lot of people? Or?
I think if you look, there's people, not a lot necessarily, because I think a lot of people don't know that it's necessarily an anti-Semitic myth, or used as an anti-Semitic myth. Because I'm not sure I did until recently. But then I'd never really given it much thought outside of that Phantom Stranger origin, which I must have read 25 years ago.
like, I would assume, based on this, that it's just taking stuff from a lot of different myth and just hodgepodging it together.
Which can be a dangerous
thing. I doubt there's
to
any malice in it. Yeah, yeah. Especially these days, man. Freaking anti-Semitism among a bunch of other shittiness is on the rise. So, yeah.
Yeah. But apart from that, I would say the episode was quite good. It's just there's that big cloud hanging over it.
That didn't actually occur to me with the same name.
Yeah, I don't think I would. I think they may later on spell it out a bit further. But they kind of make the point about how Elias describes him later on, kind of drives it home in case you weren't sure
right
who he was supposed to be. I'll explain exactly what but there's the question of even if he is, because he says he's somebody else. But then it's the good guys telling us that he is.
Yeah, I get you.
I suspect eventually we're supposed to feel differently to him, apart from as just not just being a simple villain. And we get things here, and I think the voice performance of him is.
Yeah, he's obviously doing kind of a Gollum thing where he's having a conversation with himself. Yes.
Mm. And I didn't look who's doing the voice, but they're doing a banger, probably the best job on the show.
Like, one sounds confident and another sounds scared.
And one sounds like a child, one sounds like an adult.
With a child's voice, yeah.
Well, no, not even. It's more like, because I think it's obviously a woman doing the voice, I would guess.
It comes across as a little deeper, but it still sounds like it's coming from a child's vocal cords, if you get what I mean.
It feels more like somebody doing the voice of a teenage boy rather than a child.
Okay.
You know, a bit like how your woman who plays Luffy can swing her voice from sounding like a 19-year-old boy or actually a woman.
A youthful ability. I quite enjoyed this episode. It was nice to see it's Chise, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was nice to see her kind of come out of her shell a bit and actually start being emotionally involved with people. that more on the surface, yeah. You can see that kind of change slowly happening the whole time, though, but
I do apologise. It is a man doing the voice.
Is it?
Yes, so it's even more impressive.
Hmm.
It's the voice of Baby Banana Bunch. But maybe there's some better examples. He was Rui in Gatchaman Crowds, Joker in Joker. I'm trying to think of other things I've seen them in.
Hmm.
So I think he's probably got quite a high voice.
Yeah, to be able to do a lot of those. Hmm.
Yep. I do apologise. I stuck his voice for being a woman. That's probably what he intended, though. So, in some of these roles he's played. It's Gollum was exactly the same thing, I thought. But it's not like doing a Gollum, but it is the same.
Oh, no, it's
effect.
Not literally fucking doing the Andy Serkis thing. It's just kind of cutting from left to right with the camera, or sometimes just like the character holding himself differently as he switches between, yeah. It was pretty well done. Yeah, lots of good bits, like the dog figuring out he's a dog.
Yes.
Having to be told several times.
By the Will-O-The-Wisp. I really like the Will-O-The-Wisp character. I think he's my favourite bit of the episode.
He's pretty good, yeah.
Particularly because he just comes in from nowhere. It's like you suddenly hear a voice you've not heard before, and it's like, and blue lights. And I was like, I guess that was a Will-O-The-Wisp from the blue lights.
Yeah.
And then he's quite a... He's quite the sassy character in telling people exactly what's up.
He doesn't take no shit, no.
Yeah.
I, a lot of stuff with Cheese I liked in this episode, that she didn't recoil from him. He's like, you're not scared of me. I'm a giant monster now. And she's like, well, you better shrink back down because you won't fit in the house.
But they do, yes. He might be a giant monster, but they do animate his head moving as if it was a horse's head. So he's not...
Yeah.
When he's rubbing his head against hers, it is very horse-like.
Mm. Well, it's not like he can smile or anything.
That's true, yeah.
More so than a skull can, I mean. Yeah.
Did they mention that he'd taken Renfred's arm in the last episode? Because they didn't mention it here,
they definitely mentioned it. Like, they said... Because, like, last time I saw him, he had an arm. I think his apprentice said he lost his arm or something like that the last episode.
Yeah.
But now we see what it was fucking used for, I guess.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah, I don't know whether his arm was used in the Chimera or whether it was used to replace Joseph's missing arm.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, I thought it was using the Chimera because that thing was made of arms mostly.
Yeah, I thought it might have been his arm after Alice shoots Joseph's arm off, and then Renfrew says he doesn't want his arm back.
Yeah. Okay.
After it's been attached to that, but then you're like, is that talking about the Chimera or is it talking about Joseph?
I did like the sense of like bringing a fucking gun to a magic fight. I'm just like. I mean, it might be handy.
Yeah, but the sigils he'd put on the bullet wasn't strong enough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it did slow him down a little when you shot a hole through his head. yeah.
And there's more of the sense of Alice and Renfred being a mirror of Elias and Chise here as well.
Yeah, it's a similar kind of thing, but obviously they're coming from different places. And even your man says, like, he's kind of mad at the kid... Joseph or whatever for being for crossing between the world of mages and sorcerers.
Yeah,
so it's like they're the same kind of characters but on different paths kind of thing.
Yeah, because specifically Joseph's come to try and get the dog for himself.
It's yes,
like you're a sorcerer, you're not supposed to go after fairies.
Yeah,
that's mage business.
Hmm.
And so, to avoid being taken by Joseph, the dog...
And because of how he feels about Chise and everything, yeah.
But I think he might have waited for the binding rather than doing it there and then in the middle of a fight.
Mm.
Offers himself up as a familiar, which apparently you're not supposed to do. It's supposed
the mage is supposed to ask permission of the fairy, not the other way around. But he's a strange dog.
Yes. And so, yes, they bind together and they see him off after, and then they shoot his arm off. And this, where he basically sees off the Chimera, which has got parts of the corpse of his previous mistress or sister.
I thought it was going to be something like that initially, but then you see like the full thing of the mantis looking thing that that your man wrecks. And I was like, okay, they weren't going to do that. And then they actually do that. So that was kind of like a double blind on me.
Yeah, it stops, and they have to stop Chise from doing breaking reality.
Yeah, like just like taking the reins of magic. He's like, yeah, sure, you can change lead into gold, but fucking don't. Like,
was it tarantula wasps or something she was summoning?
Yeah, she kind of just pulled them out of
thin air.
Yeah, she turned something into
absorbed part of Elias as well while she was
by accident. Yeah. She just ate my arm. A lot of arm losing in this. Yeah. Like, she says, like, I'm in a lot of pain and I'm bleeding out, but that's never really like, oh, she's fine. She'll just walk it off.
Anyway, it looks like a change of pace again next week. So we shall see. I don't know how many episodes this is going for.
I'm not sure, actually.
Yeah. I imagine just one season's worth.
Hmm. I'm still enjoying it. It's still the kind of weird, like old school magic and legends, and there's that sense of niceness and wonder and constant threat, which I find quite enjoyable.
Yeah, I wonder how. I do wonder how much of an influence John Constantine is on Renfred.
Yeah. The kind of
the trench coat. Wizard.
The cool guy, yeah. Could be.
Because it definitely feels like, not necessarily the same as, but akin to that sort of Vertigo comics
Well, I guess he's supposed to be like the wizard in modern times, yeah. But yet you still make him like an old school fucking detective looking guy.
Yeah. Righty-ho. Next up, more modern-day mysticism in Blood Blockade Battlefront. Desperate Fight in the Macro Zone, Part 1. I'm pretty sure I've read this story in the comic.
I don't think I have. I don't think I've gotten that far.
I think the name stuck in my head, and then some beats in the story did. Okay. So, yeah, I wrote some notes on this one. Not many, but just enough. So, yeah... In this episode, one of Leo's friends runs afoul of a criminal microbe, turning him into the Hulk, and Leo teams up with a microbial scientist hunting the criminal.
Well, he gets hit in the back of the head by your man's spaceship.
Yeah, and no, by his doomsday weapon.
His doomsday weapon hits him in the back of the head.
Yes.
That entire thing where the robot wasn't the guy, and like the guy was actually like piloting that tiny little fucking thing, and it's like, yes, my ultimate weapon is complete, and he's just there lording it over, and then it kind of pans back, he's like, dude, it looks like a plastic model. It's just on Leo's desk.
And my favorite bit is when he thinks he's talking to the sphere and he goes, no, I'm out on the platform over here.
yeah, and even that's not him, like, no. He's a microbe in controlling like a flea exoskeleton.
Yes, like a water flea as well, not like a flea.
yeah.
Meanwhile, so... Brody and Hummer have been allowed out of prison to visit the art museum. Is it a Cezanne?
I think it's a Cezanne because you have the which guy's which? I keep forgetting.
That's good. Hummer is the host.
Is Hummer the blood? Oh, Hummer's the pretty guy who everyone thinks is pretty, and Brody's the blood.
I do, yeah. Is it Deldro, Brody, and Dog Hummer?
Okay. But yeah, I did like them taking him back in the armored limo, and it's like, wow, that Cezanne sir had some shit, didn't he? And the prison warden's like, the fuck? And it's like, why, you think we prisoners just like looking at dirty pictures of ladies? Come on. I'm into fine art. I'm blood.
We've got some art supplies. We get some art supplies in. I'll get home and paint it.
And put some roll-ups in there for me. Oh! You know, fucking...
Yeah, and Warden Alice are constantly annoyed. Though she does find Hummer attractive.
Everyone thinks Hummer's gorgeous. that's just a given.
In some shots, gimmick works. But yeah, I forgot how wet he seems as... How wet Dog is...
Yeah, he's just a nice guy.
He is, yeah, just happy to go along.
Oh, I mean, like, you're taking me to the exhibition. I don't really see the problem if you take me there and take me back to prison. That's nice enough of you to bring me.
But at the same time, really happy when the handcuffs come off and the pair of them get to fight together.
Oh, he likes doing his job. He likes working with the guy. I mean, like, I imagine the handcuffs do nothing. Essentially, that's just like a thing of like, we'll take the handcuffs off. It's like, oh, okay, because I could have taken them off at any time, but, you know, he's too nice.
Oh, and the names of their blood moves are great compared to...
It's like consecutive normal punches.
Yes.
grab and throw. It's like, that's not a move. That's the physical action. Two physical actions, I guess.
But yeah, because of everybody else's crazy, particularly Klaus's... naming them all by number
and a big German word or combination word. And again, it's still like bang 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 bang, like prints it onto the screen, but it's like just something pretty normal, but it's extraordinary because of his Hulk Venom body.
And we also get some stuff with the monkey. We discover this friend of Leo, and Leo apparently constantly getting mugged by this same guy who's entirely made out of hands.
I fucking love that. His giant hands, all of which are arms.
Yes.
And his face is a hand as well. He's pinky. Yeah. His face is like an open thing. His eyeballs are just floating above it. I'm constantly impressed by the weird-ass, alien-esque designs in these things. They're great.
Yeah. It was another good episode, and... I think the thing I like about this show is that it, particularly this compared to the last season, is that it doesn't have a continuing plot.
It's like, it feels more like, yeah, you're just thrown into their life as it's happening, kind of thing.
Yeah, you tune in to see your favorite characters come together, solve a problem. It's like,
And sometimes they have to leave in the middle of that problem to solve a different problem that's happening.
But it always feels like by the end of the story that something's been resolved.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of my favorite parts of this one as well is Leo's friend, after being infected by the Hulk germ, is like hassled by fucking Zap for money.
Yes.
And he gets the shit kicked out of him because I'm like, great. And he gets hit by two cars off screen.
Yes.
And then it's like, oh, Zap's in the hospital again. good stuff.
Not sure there's much more to add, except it's part two. By the end of the episode, Leo's friend has grown bigger than high-rise buildings after Brody punched him.
They call up Klaus on the phone. It's like, okay, the more you hit him, the more he'll get bigger. So you need to not hit him. And Klaus is like, cool, got it. And he just traps him. But the guy breaks past his stuff just by being held by it. It's enough to make him bigger. But Brody and Homer just start punching the shit out of him.
Yeah, he bursts out. He like gets fatter and fatter and fatter. And then a smaller version of him explodes outside of...
Yeah, presumably a tougher one.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they are still unbreakable crosses. So he can't quite actually break out of them, I guess. Yeah.
And Brody and Homer's trying to protect the people behind him, isn't he, by punching him 100 times.
He does turn into like a fucking Godzilla looking motherfucker by the end of it. And I just realized, like, the, because I'm kind of watching the end credits of this now and seeing is like, okay, that's this plot, that's this thing.
Yeah.
And is he going to face off against the world's largest pedestrian? Because that seems to be the suggestion at the end of this.
Possibly, yes.
good stuff.
Righto, next on my list I've got Mr. Osomatsu. This was a three-part thing, but they only...
two of them are titled in the title, episode.
Yeah, I can't remember what the title is of the first one, which is a shame because it's a pretty... It's
like, several of these bits made me laugh out loud, and this was one of them where... I was just like, Dion's gone mad with power.
Yes.
instantly mad with power.
It is Decapan has
invented the teleportation machine from the fly,
but it's a combining the Cronenberg machine. Fly. Yes, but he uses it to make curry rice by putting curry in one side, rice in the other.
I'll make millions. It's like it doesn't even combine them; they're like separated on the plane.
Yes, and so Dayan pushes Decapan in one thing, puts a fly in the other. And they come out. And people in the comments saying this is a Shin Megami, whatever it's called.
The
Thing Persona's a spin-off.
Yes. Shin Megami is a Tensei?
Yeah.
I feel like I got the wrong word there. It's something
the
like that.
Thing they say when they pleasure doing business with you or something.
Oh, okay. I thought that was just a weird thing they did. Everyone was happy to be combined. Hmm.
So then he proceeds to combine the entire cast in various ways. It never increasingly Go Nagai, and then later weirder and weirder things.
I think my favorite one was like the three brothers. That made me laugh a lot. I did like the way he combined the two kids, and you couldn't really combine them very well because they're very distinct character designs. So it's just like split in the middle for the most part. Good stuff. And he decides to combine everything in the world to create God?
Yes.
I think that was his plan. Obviously he uses his ability to inhale everything that he rarely uses.
And all that amounts to, all God amounts to is a pile of shit.
Yeah.
And then he starts...
It's like anything, you mix everything together, it's not going to turn out good.
And then he starts crying because...
What have I done?
Anyway, much better than Evangelion in a much shorter time.
That's true, yeah. It is much. It's fairly concise in how it does it.
Yes. Then we get Jushi Matsu and the Dolphin.
Oh, fucking hell, man. This was great.
This also felt like the show breaking through some of the walls it's put up between different elements of the show so far.
It felt like a fuck you to everyone who really wants that, like, one Jushi Matsu episode, which was a good episode, but yes. It's like, that's not this show, guys.
So, yes, in this episode, Jushi Matsu wants to be a dolphin. So he goes to work at SeaWorld, or the equivalent that Dekapan and Iaomi are running.
And it's all the dolphin trainers are the Osmatsu girls, except for, obviously, the Jushi Matsu one.
Yeah, the girly Matsus work there.
Girly Matsus.
Because the one who met to make up the six of them, though, is the girl he fell in love with in season one.
Yeah, just to really try and ruin it.
And she's the one put in charge of training him to be a dolphin.
Well, his passion has impressed her, because all the other girly Matsus are kind of like, we're dolphin trainers. We actually need dolphin trainers. So we could train you to be a dolphin trainer. We don't train people to be dolphins. You can't be a dolphin. That's ridiculous.
And also, all the while, the animators are drawing the Karamatsu, girly Matsu, as sexy as possible. Just
about. Oh, yeah. trying to confuse people, all right.
So basically, for the most of the episode, she's torturing him as she tries to train him to behave like a dolphin.
Like, okay, you just need to hold your breath for 30 minutes, because that's how much a dolphin is. Okay, you get one breath. Ready? Go. Jams his head underwater. Yeah. Ties him up and throws him in. It's like, yeah, just use your flukes. good stuff. A lot of what made me laugh in this episode is just his yells of pain and terror, which he's very good at. Yeah.
They're not going to let him do the performance. Because he's
crap.
He is terrible, yes.
he needs one of those, what do you call those little boards for learning how to swim? The little foam ones, get across.
But then he shows up right at the end wearing nothing but a dolphin on his dick.
Well, you can arses are funny, dicks are not funny, so yeah.
And also because it plays into the song. At the end.
Oh, God, the fucking wonderful song. Oh, so good.
And yes, remarkably, him and the dolphins do this remarkable dance, which then leads them to escape the SeaWorld situation.
Like at the last second, it becomes like Free Willy kind of thing, yeah.
And then the song is playing, and the lyrics are fantastic. They name-check the full Monty.
Yep, several times. It's the chorus, I think. good stuff.
And, they're kind of telling you to behave like Jushi Matsu.
Like, yeah, the entire episode is kind of like, I've got to follow my dreams. And it's like, dude, you seriously, you cannot be a dolphin. No, I want to be a dolphin because I'm a neat and I don't have a job. And it's like, we can train you to be a dolphin trainer. You can't be a dolphin. You're a person. And it's like, always follow your dreams, kids. And you too could be a dolphin. And it's just like, yeah, just taking that kind of bullshit to the just a very stupid degree. Yeah.
I mean, I know a couple of brothers who argue over which of one of them said when they were younger that they wanted to grow up to be a polar bear.
Well, yeah, when you're a kid, that's fine.
And in Goldfish Warning, the lead character in Goldfish Warning, she wants to grow up to be a penguin. Because she's in love with the penguin who delivers the mail. And then at the end you get a very brief sketch with Totoko.
I read it at the start and then I watched the credits as I usually do and I was like, oh right, I forgot this was also credited at the end.
Totoko and Nya, which is her and the cat based idol, basically having an argument over who can drink the most. Well,
but refusing to make it that?
Yes.
Because I guess they want to stay cute and not get in a drinking contest at an Odin stand.
But the real humor in that is your fella's reactions to the pair of them.
Chibita, yeah. He's just going like, hey, glad you can make it, Totoko. And then he's like, oh no, this is bad. Because they're basically having, like, at the end, like a bar fight in the fucking Odin stand.
Yes.
It's like, how are you even doing this? It's a bench.
But just like the body language of the cartoon and just like the little noises the voice actor's making.
The worried noises, yes.
It's it's just that thing of like, oh, this is going to get out of control. I don't know how to stop it from getting out of control.
And apparently this is to be continued, so that's going to be a recurring thing.
Okay, and what does it say for next week? Campaign starting now. Ichimatsu just wants to get some sleep, and Ayami is a games master.
Okay.
Sounds good to me. Right, I believe we've got Dragon Ball Super to talk about. Showdown of Love, Androids versus Universe 2. That's pretty much what happens.
Well, you have three of the Universe 2 guys who just have to keep an eye on Goku, but by the end they're kind of like, we could probably just kick the shit out of him now. He's kind of weak right now. I don't know about two of the guys. One guy's big, the other guy has a jewel in his head, might be badass, but the other guy doesn't know how to take a helmet off to put an earring on. So I'm doubting his abilities.
Based on next week's episode title, I'm guessing they're mega fucked.
Yeah. It's kind of like Universe the 6, because it's like, oh no, they have those Nameks. And I was like, I haven't seen those motherfuckers do jack shit. So I don't really think they have much of a chance. Yeah.
Episode 118 might as well be called Universe 2, Universe 6, Mega Fucked.
Oh, dear.
But first, before we get to eliminating two more universes, the androids take care of the two remaining magical girls. 17
and it seems like they're kind of like doing their own thing, but by the end of it, it's clear they've been working together this entire time.
Yes, yeah.
Which is great.
There's a couple of highlights in this, is where Ribrian's got 18 captured, and... And when she points out her husband in the crowd, she's like...
Well, yeah, she can see her, like, I've got a husband and kid, yes. I've got to fight for them, I know about love, and it's like, but your husband is ugly, he didn't even have a nose.
That's your beautiful husband. He doesn't even have a nose. He's and bald.
Not to be body shaming or anything, but Ribrian, you turn into a big fat lady. It's beauty's on the inside, is what I'm trying to say.
We also get some of your fella from the robot universe with his power suit.
Oh, yeah. So, what was it? He turns on... Is it B power, which is battle power, is 300 times more powerful?
Yeah, something like that.
You get Vegeta going like, I can totally do that too, and
oh yeah,
just get punched for it, which is pretty great. Yeah. I'll just react to the punches, and eventually I'll just beat him by reactions. It's like, no, Vegeta, you're too angry.
But that was a perfect bit of comedy.
Off
the Ultra. Yeah, he's trying to activate Ultra Instinct by just being punched repeatedly in the head.
Because I'm bound to react to this eventually. Like, but eventually he just gets cross.
What are you doing, Vegeta? Dodge.
And I was like, no. Maybe he has a plan. He doesn't have a plan. He's very stupid.
Yeah, Whis figures it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it ends with Ribrian getting super, super, super big.
Crazy big. Like bigger than the entire stage by the look of it.
And then blasting through with some great animation. I was expecting them to take a bit of a week off this week, but then that's as fucking awesome as it's been so far.
That's really fucking cool. It's really fucking class to see A-Team kick some ass, because fucking half the time it's like at the start of the episode it's like, oh, fucking A-Team's got a sore ankle or she twisted her ankle or something, and 17's like, oh yes, I've helped the animals and my children's and stuff, and you know he's still being cool, fucking 17. So it was nice to see her kick some fucking ass.
I guess it's just like the actual pain of stepping on it or was the problem, because we know they've got unlimited stamina, has been stated earlier.
Yeah, that's why I say it's a twisted ankle kind of thing. Yeah, so it's only stepping on it funny, which I think happens there like once.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else to add from this episode. No one else gets eliminated apart from the two magical girls, and I presume Doc is going to take care of those other three next week.
I nearly think the lads were cheating from the stands, but like apparently they were just glow rods, but she can feel their love. But it seemed to be they were shooting energy directly into her.
Well, it sounded like the spirit bomb. That's how I figured it was like.
I mean, like, there was pink energy coming from their glow rods into Ribrian.
It's the power of love.
I don't know. I think the power of love might be...
But I think
from the stands is a bit cheap.
I think it was supposed to be like the spirit bomb parody.
Yeah, I figured as much, because all her thing is love.
Yeah, but obviously it's not true love like 18 has for Krillin.
it's a general love, not a very specific love, which is something worth fighting for, I guess.
Yeah, I think he's probably saying, he's probably saying for the mums watching, I'm going to guess.
Could be. When your one's like, I guess there's kinds of love in the universe we haven't discovered yet. It's like, what, between a man and a woman? A husband and wife? Very fucking strange. Yeah. Like, where the hell, what kind of love are you talking about?
I think the idea is supposed to be Ribrian's like a naive younger woman who doesn't fully understand the adult relationship that... presumably a 40-year-old android has for a 40-year-old bald husband.
That's true love, man.
Yeah, it was another great episode. It's on a pretty good run of them. I think when we look back at this, there's going to be a lot more good episodes in this arc than there were bad ones.
Yeah, I think even the bad ones, like the fact that they'd have led into or set up for such good ones, it's going to look really good by the end. But honestly, they really managed to screw the ending, but so far, so really good.
Yeah, so I guess we get two, and unless they do a swerve and eliminate one of three or four, I'm guessing two and six are gone next week.
Yeah, maybe that's the only problem I would say. It's like you can kind of predict who's on the fucking chomp.
I mean, I always love these One Piece and Dragon Ball Super episode titles, which tell you exactly what's going to happen in the episode.
just so you can't be upset by the ending, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, particularly, obviously, One Piece, they're obviously assuming that you've read the comic already. You just check it in to see what it looks like.
Well, I mean, like, the vast majority of people have, so that's fair enough.
I think it's part of the aesthetic, is to know going in exactly what you're getting.
Like opera.
Yeah.
You know the plot before you get there.
Anything to add on Land of the Lustrous or Garrow? Or you want to wait for Niall?
I should probably wait for Niall, just to bounce stuff off. Garrow's actually had some pretty good fights this episode, but I was less enthused about the giant werewolf knight suits fight until they started punching and wrestling. And then I was like, yes, now this is much better. Well, they're just giant swords and everything. I was like, eh. But the choreography was, and the way it was shot was much better. And Land of the Lustrous, some like really good action scenes. And again, it's just super creepy and interesting. So, yeah, really enjoying both. More so Land of the Lustrous. I think Garrow's okay, but it's like the worst thing I'm watching for this.
Yeah, that was kind of where I was. And I was like, it's... so many things on the weekend as well. It's kind of like six full-length episodes is probably my limit.
That's fair enough.
And even
yeah.
then, I think I'm pushing it with to six. I think my limit going into next season will be to say five. And
we can do like the first
say, it's not even
episode
six,
or two.
I'm watching seven. I forgot.
Yeah, I was going to say. I was thinking. I was like, wait a minute. It's like...
Yeah, I wasn't counting Dragon Ball in that.
Okay. Anything different or changing in
Time Bank? And I'm not caught up.
Oh, okay. I was going to call it the alternative to My Hero Academia because I couldn't think of the name for it.
Well, yeah, it definitely does seem to be that because My Hero Academia is coming back as soon as Time Bank 24 is over again.
Oh dear.
You'll be just be the rest of your life will be alternating Time Bank 24s and My Hero Academias.
That's how you can tell, like, oh, it's a year has gone.
Talking of My Hero Academia, I'm not sure the end of the current arc really worked for me in the comic, but
okay,
that's a topic for this podcast way in the future.
Fair enough.
May actually work better as a cartoon.
Hmm.
Righty ho, I think that wraps everything up. Do you want us to say? Do you know if anything's coming up on Secret of Sailor Madness?
Off the top of my head, no. There's nothing definitive marked down, but if you go there right now, you can see. What was the last thing we did? The Book of Life. Kind of late coming in, but yeah, still worth talking about and trying to figure out what exactly went wrong with that. But yeah, we should have a few things on the slate, just nothing definitive.
And coming up on Dynamite in the Brain, next week is our third annual Angel's Egg episode. It was going to be our last, but I may have changed my mind and we may do a fourth one next year. I thought I'd run out of things to say, but I found some more things to say, so it may be a well we can keep on going back to. But hey, talking of wells you keep on coming back to, next week there'll be more. Let's go! Hopefully with Niall back with us. Full strength, let's go, gang. And if you can't get enough of us, check us out on our regular podcast at secretofthesailormadness.com and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye!
Bye!
Stop.